Next hour, open lines here on Coast to Coast AM. But when we come back with Seth Breedlove, we're going to take your phone calls as we talk about small town monsters. Have you seen any? Check in with us, too, on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, George Norrie back with you along with Seth Breedlove. And Seth's website, by the way, is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It's smalltownmonsters.com. And Seth, when does the Boggy Creek documentary come out?
It comes out on November 11th. So our films are available through Amazon and Vimeo On Demand and then through our web store as well. So that's probably going to be your best bet for getting it when it first comes out.
Have you been approached yet by Hollywood to try to grab these for the either big screen or for Showtime, HBO, or anything like that?
You know, we have not officially done anything as far as these are concerned. Last year, we were actually in talks to develop a show, but it never really went anywhere. We didn't. I have very specific ideas for what I want Small Town Monsters to be, and it was not what we were discussing. So as of now, they are not on television, but we really hope to get them there eventually.
Super. Let's talk about the Minerva Monster Day, then we'll go to the many phone calls lining up to talk with you, Seth. And again, let's go through it. How do people get to it, first of all?
Minerva Monster Day is taking place in Minerva, Ohio, which is a relatively small town. It's in Stark County, about 20 minutes east of Canton, which is home of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So that's kind of what I always tell people as far as where to go. But this year's event is being held in two locations. Friday, the September 23rd, we are doing are holding like a short film competition. So we invited local kids and adults and kind of everyone to submit 5 minute or less short monster films. And we're going to have prizes and everything. So we're going to play some of the entries at the Roxy Theater in downtown Minerva. And that's on Friday, the 23rd. And then that's going to be followed up by the big screen premiere of Wild Man, My Search for Sasquatch, which is a film by a guy named Justin Chernopesky. And he's a photographer and adventurer. So the movie looks absolutely gorgeous. I saw a trailer for it just a few months ago, or actually it might have been a few weeks ago, and thought instantly that I would love to have it involved in the event. So we contacted him about being able to actually screen that film. So that is taking place on Friday night. And then Saturday, the 24th at the Minerva High School and Minerva Municipal Park, we are holding Minerva Monster Day itself. So that's going to start off with a talk by Brandon and I. Brandon's my producer. And then we're going to show just a whole bunch of kind of cryptid-themed films throughout the day alongside having Lauren Coleman and a filmmaker friend of mine named Dave Knopp. They're both going to speak. Dave's going to speak about filmmaking and making your own monster film. And Lauren's going to actually talk a little bit about the Minerva Monster case itself. So,
well, give my regards, too, when you see him, would you?
I will, yeah, good, for sure. I'm really excited to hear what he has to say about the Minerva Monster case, because he was one of the guys that I know investigated that and talked to people back then and has written about it in some of his books as well. So I'm anxious to hear him, because he is a fount of knowledge when it comes to this subject of cryptozoology. So it's just going to, Saturday is going to be a whole bunch of different Bigfoot films. I've seen Bigfoot, Sasquatch Out of the Shadows, Mystery at Loch Ness, Minerva Monster, Beast of Whitehall, sneak preview, I guess you'd call it, of Boggy Creek Monster. And then the final film, we're doing something kind of fun. We're actually going to show a movie in the park after dark in Minerva Municipal Park. We're going to show our final movie of the day, and that's going to be a film called Something in the Woods. So it is a jam-packed day, and it is all entirely free. So if you are in Ohio or traveling from out of state, we have a lot of people coming from out of state this year. I've been helping people find hotels out that way. So I highly recommend it. It's a it's a free event, but it's family friendly.
That's great. Now, people dress up in costume at all?
We get a guy, we actually have a guy out in Minerva who runs around town throughout the week leading up to Minerva Monster Day. And if you see that guy and you snap his photo and send it in, you are entered to win prizes. So that's actually put on by the Minerva Chamber of Commerce. So they get into it, and he's there for the event. We have a Bigfoot guy in costume. If people want to show up in costume, that would be great. Go for it.
I love it. That's great for you, and I'm glad you thought of this. And are you going to do this all the time now?
This is our second year. We'll see how it goes. I mean, we had a blast last year, and we had so many people out that, I mean, it literally flooded the downtown area of Minerva, which is a very small town, and they did not shut down the main street for us. They did not expect.
They weren't ready for this, were they?
They weren't ready for this. So we kind of flooded the downtown area, and this year when we were discussing with the Chamber of Commerce kind of setting up the event again, I said we should probably try to do it somewhere else, you know, where we could have a large gathering of people. So that's why we're going with the high school this year. And so we'll have a whole auditorium to show movies in, and we won't run into seating issues like we did last year. And we hopefully won't have people wandering into traffic like we did last year. So I think it'll be a lot of fun, and it coincides with Minerva's Oktoberfest. So it's kind of the perfect little slice of Americana that we wanted Small Town Monsters to be, kind of to begin with.
All right, let's go to the phones. Stories and questions for you, Seth. We'll pick it up by going to Mike in Eugene, Oregon. Mike, thanks for calling. You're on the air with us. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Great show. I listen to you all every night.
Oh, thank you.
And Seth, thanks for your work. Yeah, I wanted to share a story. I was 14 years old, 1974, at church camp up in the Cascades between Saddle Lake and Blue Lake. It's kind of the Three Sisters Wilderness area. And we decided to sneak out and try to steal a gallon of milk from the kitchen. So we were taking this roundabout way in the middle of the night. And we started hearing these footfalls and breaking branches. And I stopped Kendall and I said, "What the heck is that?" And it got louder and louder, and then it just stopped. And I was so scared, I was just sitting there shaking. And finally got the nerve to shine the flashlight. And we noticed there was a herd of deer there too, kind of off in the distance. He shined the flashlight, and this thing starts screaming. A sound like I've never heard before, right? Kind of like an electronical elephant kind of noise. And took off, running up the hill, the branches breaking, screaming, and these footfalls like an elephant running through the woods. I mean, I've never heard anything shake the ground like that. And it's just like I remember it like it happened last week. It scared me so much. But the next day we went up and checked it out, and there wasn't any mud to see toes, but there was in the bank and stuff, there were big footprints, much bigger. And I tried to jump up in the air and make a footprint like that, and I couldn't do it.
There's no way.
Broken branches and whatnot, and showed our guy that was in charge of our thing, and they didn't know what to say. But yeah, to this day, I'll never forget that. And that's the Sasquatch that lives in the Cascades, I guess.
Huh.
So I guess, Seth, have you heard about that type of similar situation?
I've heard a lot about the Cascades. I know that. And what you're talking about, that electronic elephant, is the most unique description I've ever heard given for that scream. But you know, when we talked to Brian Gosselin, who was our feature witness in Beast of Whitehall, he talked about a scream. And what you're describing, when you said electronic elephant, I can kind of imagine what you're describing, and it's actually similar to what Brian said he heard. Of course, his sighting was in the, you know, at the base of the Adirondack Mountains, kind of the Adirondack region, but nonetheless, I definitely hear these scream reports a lot, and it's one of the more fascinating sides. Do you remember when this took place? Were there any physical side effects that you recall?
Feel any physical side effects?
Yeah.
No, I didn't. I was scared, you know, a lot of adrenaline. But he said he looked at it and he thought he saw red eyes, but I would not look. When he shined the flashlight, I mean, I was, and he's smaller than me. He laughs to this day. He says, this big guy behind me is like huddled over me. But the sound was like something I've never heard before or since. I can't, that's what I kept saying. I said, "Kendall, that sounds like some kind of electronical noise or something. I just never heard anything like that." And the footfalls is what impressed me. It's something to have that much weight to distribute that would, you know, it sounds like it's shaking the ground. It's
just, oh, that's
boom,
right.
Boom, you know.
Yeah.
And it ran up that hill in no time. I mean, it took off, and And I think it wanted to, I think it might have been hunting the deer is what we thought. And we ticked it off, or, you know, it definitely knew we were there. And then when we shined the flashlight, that was
it. And there's got to be many. What do you think the community size, if they're real, Seth, if they're real, what do you think the community size might be?
Well, I mean, it has to be thousands, I think, for there to be a sustainable population of them. You know, and that just brings up more questions. You know, if you're literally talking about thousands of these things existing, how do we not see them? I think the number I've heard is there has to be a population of at least, I think, 2,000 to 3,000, but it's 10,000 would be better. So, I mean, if you're talking to, if there really were 10,000 of these creatures running around, you have to wonder how they managed to stay hidden with that many of them. And why don't we have more sightings of young ones, of juveniles, even though there
babies,
are reports?
Yeah. There are a few, not a lot.
Right. And we actually have a couple in Boggy Creek Monster.
Really?
Yeah, a couple juvenile reports. A great, fantastic story right toward the end of the film about a juvenile sighting that'll kind of blow your mind, I think.
All by itself?
That's part of the fun of the story. It was a guy did see a juvenile. It was in a swamp, and I'm going to give the quick synopsis of this so I don't give
sure.
it away. But, you know, he sees this juvenile in the swamp crying, kind of tries to lure it out of the swamp because he was afraid it was going to get hurt. And around the same time, he started hearing screams and kind of brush thrashing, you know, headed in his direction. And his assumption was that it was a mother and father or a mother coming to, you know, scare him off. So, and that is an awesome story that kind of ties into a couple other sightings, older sightings that have taken place in the Falk area that might be juvenile Falk monsters.
Let's go east of the Rockies now. We're going to Beaumont, Texas. Basil is with us. Hello, Basil. Thanks for calling.
Hello. What do you think of the Sierra sounds? And I have a follow-up on that question there. The Sierra sounds by Ron Moorhead.
Do you know anything about that, Seth? I don't.
I do. I even got to spend some time with Ron back in, I think it was June or July at Creature Weekend here in Ohio. Creature Weekend is this amazing kind of cryptozoology event. I don't know if you know much about it, George, but it's a really cool kind of cryptid conference. And it takes place here in Ohio near Salt Fork State Park. So, and that's put on by my buddy Bruce. But he was actually at the event, played some of the sounds. I haven't spent a lot of time dissecting those sounds. I think there's actually two CDs that kind of comprise the Sierra sounds. And the first CD I'm deeply fascinated by. I think it's really unique, kind of believable audio. And the second half, I could not tell you what I think of it. It's so bizarre and so kind of otherworldly that it throws me off. So I don't have a direct opinion of the Sierra sounds, but there's definitely something there that should be dissected and really analyzed. Because, I mean, I highly recommend anyone who hasn't listened to those to give them a listen, because there's almost what appears to be a language taking place when you hear them.
All right, let's go back. Basil has another comment. Go ahead, Basil.
Yes, I've taken the time to listen and dissect them. If you would like to listen to it, I have it recorded right here, and I can tell you exactly what's being said.
It's the sound of a Bigfoot, you think?
No, that's Ron Moorhead and them putting on. If you would listen to it, this one says, "I often feel like I'm alone." Right here, listen. Listen. Can you understand that?
Well, you can understand it a little bit. I mean, it's
okay,
difficult over the radio.
I feel like I'm alone. Okay, listen.
Yeah,
okay. One particular one. Another one, he's saying ice cream, banana split. And then he said, he's saying, "Do you want any?" And the other guy is saying, "You got a deal." It's a put on. And another one they say is, they're saying, Jungle Forest. I have it all right here.
Try to get some of that to us if you can. I don't know if you have the capability of MP3-ing it to us, but Seth, do you get lots of solicitations of things like that, videos and audio? Does it come your way?
We do, but not because of Small Town Monsters. I get a lot of that because of Sasquatch. People wanting me to hear noises they've recorded. I get a lot of intriguing audio, especially from here in Ohio, because we do these library. I do a lot of like library presentations and talks at libraries around Ohio, and people are always wanting to play kind of their what they believe to be Bigfoot calls. And a lot of time, I think it's more than likely a coyote or a wolf. But we did have a really unique sound from recorded down near Carroll County that sounds very similar to the Ohio Howl, which is kind of the famed Bigfoot call. I mean, if you think of like the Patterson-Gimlin film.
Sounds like a locomotive, doesn't it?
Right. This is like the Patterson-Gimlin film in audio. I mean, it's very unique. And they played me something that sounded a lot like that, which is another little Boggy Creek trivia moment. We recorded something when we were down in Falk filming that sounds a lot like the Ohio Howl.
Have you ever gotten reports of a Bigfoot hurting somebody?
Have I taken reports? Other than the Ford incident in the Boggy Creek Monster in Legend of Boggy Creek does involve, a creature kind of startling someone, possibly attempting to harm them, but it never, grabbed anyone or tried to kill them. The Minerva Monster did potentially kill the family's dog. They found the family, found the dog with its neck snapped, dead outside of its house the next morning. But personally, I've never taken a report of like a Bigfoot beheading anyone or anything like that.
Mike is in Ohio. Let's get you in here before the break. Michael, go ahead.
Hey, good morning, George. Good morning, Seth. Thank you. I called before about possibly the government using a Bigfoot. I found out the information, but it's hilariously embarrassing to me and hilariously funny. So maybe I'll see you in Minerva, Seth, and tell you the story.
I had a question to ask.
Sure.
George has had several guests on the last few weeks who talked about folding space and time. And if you were a being that could transport yourself to another planet as energy, say like to the Earth that has rivers and lakes, the woods and trees, and the energy came here, and then you use the matter around you to materialize a body. What would you suggest a body to use? I would suggest a Bigfoot, because if you materialize yourself in the woods, you've got bears and wolves. I certainly wouldn't materialize myself as a human being because I would get ate. You get eaten up. So that could be a theory to where they come from and then where they go back to energy.
There has been a lot of talk that they are dimensional, Seth, and that they're coming from other planetary systems, that they could be ET related, like Chewbacca. They got that look to it, don't they?
Sure. Yeah. You almost have to wonder if Chewbacca wasn't based on Bigfoot to begin with.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's a lot of that, the dimensional kind of theory. Everyone talks about that. My problem with the dimensional theory is I feel like you're attempting to solve one mystery with another mystery, and that always, to me, kind of clouds the issue. But it's good to keep an open mind about things and always be trying to come up with something maybe outside the box as to what these things could be.
Well, we're gonna come back and take final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. It's our final segment with Seth Breedlove as we talk about his work in the paranormal realm of creatures. Anybody else in your family, Seth, into this?
Since I got into it, my parents have kind of gained an interest in it as well. They just got back from taking a trip down to Virginia for the Virginia Bigfoot Conference. But outside of myself, no, not really.
It's infectious, though. I think once you start getting into these stories, it really becomes exciting, doesn't it?
Yeah, especially if you're doing your own kind of research into it, like I do, and you kind of have your own, I guess, avenue that you want to take into it. For me, it was newspapers. I was just fascinated by the newspaper archival kind of historical stuff, and I started doing those early searches through archives for old ape reports or monster reports from the 1800s, and that was the gateway for me. That was what got me into all of it.
Did you go through old microfilms?
I did. I did that actually in the town where I live now. I went down to the local library and went through their microfilms because I was trying to find information on a local monster to me known as the River Styx monster. There's a little town near where I live. Well, I don't even know if you'd call it a town. I mean, it's basically a four-way stop with a market on the corner. But they have their own monster called the River Styx monster. And back in the 70s, this creature was seen all over that one area of River Styx. So I had gone down to the library to see if I could dig up any newspaper articles on it. And I didn't actually find any articles on that, but what I did find were some really fascinating articles about the area itself and how that area at one time was a sort of huge swamp, a vast impenetrable swamp with, I guess the article I read said there were, you know, rattlesnakes and cougars living in there and black bear and all sorts of stuff. So apparently at one time this area of Ohio was extremely dangerous, and they had their own monster living in there. And he was seen right up until about the early 2000s, and there hasn't been a report since about 2001.
What about reports of huge cats, like these panthers?
That we get. We still get those Black Panther reports, and we get them connected with Bigfoot cases. We especially had them with the Minerva Monster case, and we still get them even till today. With the Minerva Monster case, the Catons always said that they saw the creature accompanied by two cats. And, you know, I didn't know what to make of that. My original theory was that people were seeing juvenile Bigfoots. If these things exist, maybe they walk around on all fours. And we had one of our witnesses that's actually in Minerva Monster talked about seeing a smaller creature accompanying the Minerva Monster. But we did actually see a photograph that Howie Caton took of what appears to be a Black Panther out in on their property out in Minerva. So there's a lot of those upright, or not upright, but those, you know, big cat reports here, even in Ohio. But they get a lot of those down kind of near Falk and then that Texas area as well. There's a guy named Mike Mays who does a lot of research into that particular phenomenon.
And there aren't any zoos around that reported losing a cat, right?
No, there aren't. Although there are a lot of exotic animal parks here in Ohio, so that is always a
possibility.
Possibility.
Let's go to our wild card line. Farlan is with us from Ida, Oklahoma. Hello, Farlan. Thanks for calling.
Oh, hi. Thanks.
Sure.
I was going to ask. Yes, I'd like to comment on a couple of things that you mentioned, and then tell you about a dogman encounter my daughter and I had.
All right.
Okay. I heard you mention. You asked the guests if they experienced any odd feelings when they were out in the woods, and I think I know what you're talking about. I've had some nausea and some confusion, and I wasn't doing anything other than Bigfooting. I wasn't doing any drugs or drinking, and I just felt like there is something to that. I don't know what it would be, if it's infrasound or what's going on, but I have experienced that. And I heard you mention the Wood Ape Conservancy, and I was wondering if you'd ever been on an expedition with them in southeastern Oklahoma.
I haven't been on an expedition with them yet, but at some point they would like to get me into X at some point down in the Wachitas is kind of what they wanted to do, and I've considered actually even possibly at some point trying to make a documentary about them if they have an interest in that.
That's actually where I go, to the Ouachita Mountains around Honubby. And Lyle Blackburn's going to be one of the guest speakers at a conference they hold there every first weekend of October. So I'm excited to know that he's going to possibly touch some more on what you mentioned with the Boggy Creek movie. So I look forward to that presentation. I was thinking, too, that, you know, people ask, why isn't there any evidence of Bigfoot? Why don't you find them?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just totally, I like to try to pick my wording carefully because I don't want to lose all credibility when I'm trying to talk about this, but I'm convinced 100% that they are people. And that is why that's why you're not finding a body. They're not going to leave one of their own lying somewhere for you to find. if they're missing an individual, they're going to go look for that. And if that individual has passed on, they're going to bring that body back and probably bury it. So I'm just 100% convinced they are people. And my buddies and I imagine that if you were to have a Bigfoot talk to you, he might even tell you something like, tell your people we are not monsters. Tell your people we are people.
Yeah.
I don't want to take up all your time, but one Saturday night, my teenage daughter was bored. And so I said, well, let's go out of town up on a hill and let's skywatch. Maybe we'll see a satellite. And she could see something up there. She thought it was a satellite at first, but then she said, hey, do they zigzag and go in circles? I said, no.
No.
her vision was so much better than mine. I had to get my night vision binocular out. It's an old generation.
Did you see it?
I did. I found it with that, and I could see it. And it was zigzagging, and then it would just stop and drift for a while and go in a circle in a reverse direction. So she got bored with that after a while, which I certainly wasn't getting bored with it. But so she was ready to go. And so since I do Bigfoot occasionally, I decided to scan the tree line with the monocular. And when I did, I noticed some eye shine. And so I said, Jesse, look. And I had her look through the night vision, and mm-hmm. she said, I can see its ears.
Wow.
And I said, that's odd. I don't understand what she's talking about because I'm totally thinking Bigfoot. She said, I'm scared. I don't like it. I want to get in the truck. You need to get in the truck, too. I said, no, why don't you keep looking through the night vision? And I want to walk towards it. Maybe you'll get to see it right away. That's my brilliant strategy. So she said, no, I'm not having any part of it. She gets in the truck. So I'm looking through the night vision. I'm walking towards these eyes. And when I get maybe 30 yards away, finally I notice what she was talking about. There's two ears sticking up on top of the head, just like German Shepherd ears. And then my heart went into my throat, and I realized also that my old Generation 1, I'm throwing this little laser beam out, and it's got its eyes squinted shut. And so I dropped that laser beam off of its face, and when I did, both of its eyes slowly began to open up, and that just gave me the chills down my spine. And I started walking backwards while I'm still looking through the binocular. I didn't want to take my eyes off of it, but I finally had to once. And then I was just panicked, trying to hurry up and find it and make sure it was still there. And then I just turned around and got back in the truck. I said, I finally saw the ears. And she's like, I tried to tell you.
She was good.
Respectful. Yeah, she was borderline disrespectful to me, but I felt like I had it coming, so I let it stand.
That's great stories. And in terms of the zigzagging, I've seen that happen too with night vision goggles. There's something going on up in the skies. Something indeed. Do you get many Bigfoot? The UFO sightings around Bigfoot sightings, Seth?
Yeah, it seems like every time we take a one of these small town cases, we end up getting some sort of UFO case that happened around the same time. With Minerva Monster, we had actually a whole mess of Bigfoot UFO reports taking place simultaneously. Obviously, you had the Minerva Monster case going on, but you had UFO reports coming in from all over Stark County. And then with the Beast of Whitehall, you know, earlier when I mentioned the A-Bear incident, that same week that the A-Bear incident was taking place, there were UFOs spotted all over the Adirondacks. And obviously, the guy that knows more about that than me is Paul Bartholomew, but there was a large flap around that same time. And we find this a lot with these small town cases. There always seems to be, more going on than just Bigfoot. But I always wonder, is there multiple phenomena taking place, or are we seeing something that's more like an escalation? You know, people start panicking and then everyone's seeing something. So,
yeah.
You know, this guy sees a Bigfoot and this guy sees a UFO. So it's hard to say.
Panicking.
Mm-hmm.
West of the Rockies, Mark is in Fresno, California. Hi, Mark, go ahead.
Hi, I was up in North Fork doing some work. Now, North Fork is the exact center of California. And I fell asleep in the afternoon about 2:30 inside of the warehouse. And I woke up, it was past dark. In fact, it was pitch black, no electricity at the time. And I was wandering outside to get my flashlight. And I opened up the front door. And I smelled this putrid smell, and the hair stood up at the back of my neck. And I went, hey! And I heard this, three steps. I assumed this thing was standing by my car. Three steps to travel about 25 feet, and then I heard brush breaking. down beyond the parking lot, it just goes down into a big big ravine, down to a little river, and branches broke for 200 yards, and then it stopped. Silence. And that I couldn't, you know, I was frozen, but I can recollect that like it was last night. This happened in right at 1999, right before 2000.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
On top of the same old bakery, weeks prior to that, with my binoculars in my hand, just up on the roof looking up, I focused the binoculars a little bit beyond what normal focus is, and I found like a freeway of lights. I mean, they're just going so fast, I couldn't believe how fast they were going, just right beyond the what the eye can see, but the binoculars, I just happened to focus right in the right spot. And this is if there was an interstellar traffic freeway up there.
There is. I think there is, Mark. It's up there indeed. Seth, with everything you've uncovered and investigated, what's the one story that still boggles your mind?
Boy, that's a good one. I think the one that that confuses me that I would really like to examine again or go back to is Minerva. And I think I'll feel that way until I can actually revisit that case, just because there's so many aspects to that case that we did not get to cover in Minerva Monster, and then things we found out after the film was done that I wish we could have gone in depth on. You know, there's just so much going on at the Caton's property beyond just what we managed to get in the film. The film talks about, you know, the dog deaths and the family being scared of this creature behind the house and its impact on the small town and some of the neighboring people. But there's a lot more to that story. The Catons have a lot of land behind their house, and there were a lot of sightings. In fact, it seems like almost every time I go down to Tuscarawas County or Stark County, if I bump into someone who knows who I am, they want to tell me about someone they know who had a sighting of the Minerva Monster. So, I mean, there's so many sighting reports from that era and from that area, from 1978, that we honestly need to at some point revisit that story, just to kind of bring people up to date on what has gone on with the Minerva case beyond just, you know, those initial kind of typical creature sightings. There's a lot more to that case.
East of the Rockies now, it's Douglas's turn out there in New Jersey. Hey, Douglas, good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
Good, thank you.
I'm glad to hear it, George. It's a pleasure to talk to you and your guest. I do have a question for your guest, but before so, I would like to ask you one question.
Sure.
The very first time I had ever listened to Coast to Coast, I was very, very, this is going back, I'm hoping you can give me a year on this, because I would love to hear a copy of this show once again. It was Mel's Hole.
That was during Arch days, way, way gone back.
Well, that was the very first show that I had ever listened to. I had a fever, I was up all night, I put on the talk radio, and from that night on, I don't believe I had changed the dial. It totally mesmerized me. And since then, some of the shows that you've had had just totally, you know, kept me riveted. And I just want to say it's a great program. You're doing a fantastic job.
Thank you, Douglas.
And the question that I have for your guest is, he's very knowledgeable about various videos and clips and whatnot. I wanted to ask him if he ever seen the clip of, they call it the New York Baby Bigfoot. It was...
Yeah, I have seen that. And in fact, the last time I was on Coast to Coast, the guy that shot that video actually called in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that, actually, now that I'm saying that, are you talking about the Baby Bigfoot video where it's the one in the tree?
Correct.
Okay, yeah, we actually, George and I actually spoke to the man who shot that footage.
Yeah, that was that was quite a night.
Mm-hmm. I was curious of your opinion after seeing it, because I remember on the show, the big fella, Bobo, he had mentioned that he had shown the film to several people, and he had also showed it to, I'm a little nervous here, I can't remember her name, Jane Goodall.
The Ape Lady.
Right. And she's seen a copy of it, and she honestly believed that what you were looking at, she says, it's definitely a primate. She says it's small. It's the way that it moves through the trees and everything. She was almost positive that it definitely was some sort of primate. It had no tail, and she said under what she believed was it could have been a chimpanzee or an animal of that size that was up there. And then later on, I came across another video where they actually showed, it was re-enhanced, and it showed two large creatures moving in the background, and then this smaller creature jumping up into a tree and climbing around, swinging around like a child on a monkey bars. And I had seen it, and the first time I had seen it, it was on Finding Bigfoot. And then I had seen it a couple times. I was so curious that I had gone on the computer and I found it online. And there was a person after person just saying, you know, these were scientists and cryptologists. And they were all pretty much convinced that what the video was a baby Bigfoot. And I wanted your opinion on it. You said you seen the video. What do you believe that was?
Personally, I find that video very curious, because my original assumption, when I originally had heard about that video, what I had heard was not what the guy that actually shot the video told us. What I had actually heard originally was that video was shot during a music festival. So my original thinking was maybe it was someone with a pet monkey, you're at a festival, mm-hmm. you know, maybe people
that got away or something like
that. Yeah, something like that. But that guy said that was, if I remember, George, you might remember better than me. I thought that guy actually said that he shot that footage either 2 weeks prior to a festival or following a festival. So
I think it was before.
So to me, you know, my immediate assumption would be possibly an escaped monkey, but there doesn't appear to be a tail. I mean, obviously it'd be difficult to tell, but to me, when I watched it, I couldn't see a tail. So that's what you would be looking for.
Pretty compelling video though, Seth. Seth's website, smalltownmonsters.com. And if you're going to be out there in the Minerva area, you'll find it on his website at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, open lines.